In 1991, when I was renting a room from a young lady that had a 14-year-old boy and a 12-year-old little girl, the first day that Jake went to school, he was 14 now, he cussed out the teacher. The teacher went over, pushed the panic button, security shows up, and they charged him with a verbal assault. And they eliminated him from school, telling him, we're not going to file charges on you, but you cannot come back to school until next semester. If we, as a parent, would have done that to our child, we'd be neglectful. But the system could do that to someone that they didn't deem was worthy of an education. That's when I told his mother, I will slow down on working in the bars at night, and I'll start finding jobs during the daytime. And we started doing rehab. I started doing bathroom remodels, kitchen remodels, because I'd always done rehab in my past. But it was for myself or for my friends or for my family, not as a job. After a few weeks, I realized this is a program starting. With these young men and women that are not making it in education, we need to teach them vocation. We need to give them that ability to make a legal living. About a month went by, and a couple more of his buddies end up showing up at the house, you know, and they want to come to work with us. I go out and talk to their school and realize they've been eliminated also. The work program started without me even realizing it was getting started. Kids Hope. Kids Helping Other People. Kids Hope. Kids Helping Other People exist. Was created in 91, not because I had a great vision, but because I saw that there was such a need. When you've got 14, 13, 12-year-old children being eliminated from school, not being able to have education or vocation, what do you think is going to happen with them? That's what I thought about. Way before we ever incorporated Kids Hope, I had the work program up and running. I would have my little band of merry men and I, and we would go out and work on properties. We'd go out and do a bathroom remodel, but I'd bid it $1,000 cheaper. Because I tell you, I'm going to take two or three extra days and gently take your toilet out, gently take your sink out, gently take your tub out. I'm not going to come in there and smash them and put new in. I want to reuse those. I don't care if your potty is pink or blue or black. I don't care. It works. I need it. I'm putting it in on another house. We started rehabbing homes and reusing a lot of the parts we were taking out. 23 years ago, we started recycling houses, appliances, and lives. Young men and women that were thrown away by society. We grabbed a hold of, we started doing a little bit of rehab, and we created some amazing young men and women that are beautiful. We're going next weekend to Pumpkin Patch, where one of my participants 20 years ago is now, his wife now is running the Pumpkin Patch. I have gotten so far off subject.
No, you haven't. So you recycle lives.
The reason that our program started 23 years ago was I saw a need for us to actually work on the cause of our problems, not the symptoms, not building more prisons, not creating a harder standardized test, but creating a situation where if you weren't making it in one form of education, we give you another form of education. We're not in a world that one size fits all. But we're in a world where individual program plans actually do work. And what we saw 20 plus years ago was a need to create vocational training in our education system. When we can do that, We will have a greater success with our kids in our education, in our high schools, in our junior highs. When we do that, we will have a greater success with our kids in college, because we don't talk about it. But a 40% dropout rate, 45% dropout rate in college? But that's not on your first year. That's your second or third year after you've created some outrageous debt. If we were training, teaching, showing our children the ability to make a legal living with what they like. If they like the education, great. If they like the structure of school, that's wonderful. I've always loved being a teacher. But then you have to find other ways. The reason that our program started and continues, when you're working with someone to help them improve themselves, and they are ready to do it, they are ready to work, no matter what their history was, felonies, missteps, when you're ready to actually take somebody and work side by side, not give them a hand out, but give them that ability to take care of themselves. You know, I don't like the handout, hand up, whatever. I like teaching people by example.
Is that why the charity doesn't take any government money?
There are a few reasons why Rupert's Kids doesn't take any government dollars. Years ago, I realized that the government, honestly, does not have the idea, well, the government doesn't understand helping without spending money. The government thinks that you can throw money at things and solve a problem. In our program, the best thing that I've ever been able to show, working with our kids, working with the community, when you generate $100, it's amazing what you can do with that. Teaching somebody how to take care of themselves is not an endless money pit, is not an entitlement program, it's an empowerment program. And creating empowerment programs are what Rupert's Kids is about. One of the reasons why we don't take government dollars is because I'm teaching our young men and women not to hold your hand out to the government, but to pull that hand back and take care of yourself. If I, as a program, held my hand out to the government, I would not be doing what I say, and I want to lead by example.
How do most kids come to Rupert's Kids?
You know, people wonder all the time how we get our participants, how we get our clients. It's amazing. We are making new ones every day in this system that we have. We've got a steady stream of clients coming to us from the detention centers, from probation and parole, from the foster care programs that at 18, your birthday present is a boot out the door, from the streets. People hear about what we're doing and they call. You know, if you ask Georgette how many calls a day we get for people trying to get into our program, it's anywhere from 2 or 3 to 20 or 30 a day, people trying to get in. Our waiting list, we try not to keep more than 10 or 15 on our waiting list because you get discouraged. We're restricted now by the number of clients we can have because of the number of seats we have in a vehicle, because of the amount of dollars that we have to actually help. I would go bankrupt if I took every person that tried to get into this program. We can't do it yet. It takes $5,000 to $10,000 per person per year. Doesn't sound like a whole lot, but when you have 5, 10, 15, 20 kids in your program, it's a lot of money. And that's on top of paying their payroll and paying all their stuff. But that's money earned. Being able to show that the alternative to that, though, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year for locking them up and keeping them in a detention center, creating more of a problem so they have no history besides the correctional facilities and they have no education, we create more career criminals. I'm asked all the time how we get our participants. And all it takes is one or two days of working with us, and you see. They come up to us as we're working on the streets. They come up to us here in the office. They come up to us on the phones. They get a hold of us through the mail. There are very few programs. As a matter of fact, I know of no others in this city or any other city that is doing what we do. We take those third strikers, those violent offenders, those lost children, and teach them how to be adults.
So what does that process look like of teaching somebody who grew up in a troubled situation, who didn't have a lot of positive role models? What is that process from beginning to end?
When we have young men and women walk in the door, you'd be shocked at the baggage that they come with. Molest, abuse, neglect, torture, beatings. And this is coming from your parents. This is coming from your siblings. This is coming from the people that you're told are supposed to take care of you and love you. We have a lot of young men and women that are very damaged and have no value in themselves. When they realize that there is no opportunities for them out there, that's when they start trying to find places like us. We have, you know, and I call them kids, but, you know, they're lost souls. 15, 16, 18, 20-year-old, 30-year-old participants, people walking in our door that were told by their family that they were worthless, were beaten and abused, were molested and neglected by people of authority in their world, by the people that are supposed to help and protect them. When you have your safety zone, your safety net hurting you, it's amazing what happens inside. These kids come to us just damaged. And like I teach our mentors, when you have a 20-year-old that's been shown all their life they are insignificant and worthless, they've been beaten, you're going to have 20 months of working with them and trying to convince them that they do have value, they have self-worth, they have strength, showing them that the world they came from is going to make them the strongest adults ever. They can't blame that world for any of their problems, but they can't forget that world either. One of the things that we do here in Rupert's Kids is we break cycles. A lot of young men and women that were beaten and abused, that were molested and neglected when they were children, end up doing that to their children. I can guarantee you that every one of our young men and women that go through our program understand what it is to be that parent that you always wanted, to be that daddy that grabs you and hugs you and kisses you instead of hurts you, to be that mommy that is always sweet and kind. Maybe not always, but you always know they love you.
You have a lot of participants that have children of their own. And how does the family picture fit into what you do on the mentoring side?
One of the things, besides teaching our participants how they have worth, one of the other things that we do that is a little harder for me, because I want to help every child out there. We do the parenting mentoring also, the parenting classes. I will have, like, Donovan and Dominique bring their baby in, who is, gosh, only a month old now. And we sit and talk about what's going on as I'm grabbing the baby and feeding the baby and playing around and cleaning the baby up, changing its shirt, asking why they don't have two or three changes of clothes, why you only have one diaper. One of the things that we do here is we lead by example. I love being a dad. I want everybody out there that makes babies to be a good dad or mom. The only way that you can do that is by showing. It's not something that you learn by reading it in a book, not by these kids. They have to see it. And the only reference they have is usually a horrific childhood. So we bring them in and we show them a little gentler time. One of my favorite times in my mentoring program was when my daughter was 3 years old and she was coming to work with us for years. Until she finally turned 5 and had to go to school.
How do you know when somebody is ready to leave the program?
There are a few different ways in our program that you come to the end. I've never really called it a graduation per se, but it is a graduation from our program out into the real world. There's three different ways usually our participants leave us. One way, remember how you left your parents when you were tired of their rules and you were tired of their, and you knew you were grown and on your own and you're ready to be on your own and you look right at your parents and said, I had enough of you, I'm out of here. Well, in the hundreds of participants we've had, I couldn't count how many have looked right at me and said, to heck with your rules, I know what I'm doing, I don't need you anymore, I'm leaving. And I grab them and hug them and tell them, yes, you do. You do know what you're supposed to do. You do know the rules. You do know how to take care of yourself. And they leave. And 99% of the time, they're calling me up within 2, 3, 4 weeks, either showing me their new job or showing me their new ID or asking to come back. And of course, they can always come back. But when you leave saying, just like sometimes we leave our parents saying, I don't need you anymore, sometimes that gives you that drive to show, I'm going to show Rupert I can make it on my own. There are some times in our program, the second way that you leave is by me actually saying to you, are you ready to go out and go to work for others? Are you ready? You've been here for a year or two or three. And it's time for you to go out and get another job. Now, I'm not pushing you totally away because I expect you to come back on your days off and work here. That's the second way that you graduate. The third way that you leave our program, which doesn't happen as often as the other two, but it still does happen. You reoffend, and you're taken away from us, and you go to jail. We don't fire people. We don't have the 3 strikes and you're out. When you mess up, there is always consequences. The bar is raised, but you're not thrown out of the program. I've had my program full of participants that were thrown out of other programs because the 3 strikes and you're out, or the 0 tolerance, or the whatever. So in our program, we don't really have a formal graduation. We have the progression of life.
So if I give money to Rupert's kids, what does the money go for?
You know, in our program, 100% of the donation goes directly to the program. Our social workers pay. Our mentors pay. Our participants pay. That is our biggest of our expenses. We have to be able to pay even our participants a minimum wage when they start. After their first volunteer 2 weeks, because they come in and don't get paid, they get transportation and food for the first 2 weeks and volunteer and show that they're willing to give of themselves. After they get through that, then they start going on the payroll and they get paid minimum wage to learn how to go to work. Even before they're worth minimum wage, we pay minimum wage. Just like our mentors and our social workers, we've got to have that payroll and we've got to have those dollars coming in. The donations always go to helping us create the ability to go to work, with buying the fuel and keeping the trailer and the trucks running, keeping the equipment going so we can go out and earn those dollars, cutting the medians, earn those dollars working on these properties so we can offset our payroll by the dollars earned.
So you go out and you work for a project for the city of Indianapolis. You and the guys provide services. The city or the contractor pays you for those services. That money goes to the administration. The donations then go to buying equipment, to the guys' needs. Is that correct?
Honestly, right now our administration costs are almost nil. And the administration is involved in the program also. The only people that get paid in our program are the people that are doing direct care for the clients, for our participants. That's why I can say, without a doubt, 100% of the dollars donated from the community go directly back into teaching our young men and women how to create that life for themselves. How to go fishing. We don't stand there and give people money. We stand there and say, if you want to help yourself, we'll show you how to do it. Come on with us. Dollars just given to somebody are not going to teach what dollars earned teach.
So what are some of the... what is the equipment that you have to buy that the guys use? What are the capital things that you need to keep the program running?
You know, our day-to-day expenses, it doesn't seem like much, but as, you know, the fuel costs rise, as maintenance on our equipment rises, as these costs rise, the things we spend our money on besides payroll, we've been known to go shopping and keep food in stock and spend $50 to $100 a week just keeping food on hand for some of our participants when I know they haven't eaten in a day or two. We have to buy probably $100, $75 to $100 worth of fuel a day when we're mowing these medians. We're traveling four corners of Marion County, driving, gosh, hundreds of miles cutting these medians. The mowers all take the fuel. And I'm able to teach with Henthorns, the landscape shop, teach lawn maintenance and the small engine repair. But we've got to buy all those parts too. One little part we bought the other day for the mower, it was just a little cog, $85. Doesn't sound like much, but when you're buying one or two parts every week, when you're buying $50, $75, $100 in fuel, when you're buying $20, $30, $40 in food, your expenses start adding up. And just the sundries, just the extras, can be $400, $500, $600 a week. You know, one of the other expenses in our mentoring program, when the system, the way it's set up, puts people out on the street or in these work release programs on detention or Electronic monitoring. The electronic monitor costs you $85 a week. Then you have to have the home phone. Then you have to have all these other things. And you have to have the address where, with our participants that have never made a legal dollar in their life, and you're putting them out on the streets with $100 a week being accrued, and you let them go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks, and then you look at them and say, if you don't get that $1,000 paid off by the end of the week, you're going back to jail. What would that do to a young person's mind who has never made $1,000 legally in their life? What kind of situation would you start thinking about if you were put in that position? The only way that these young men and women have to make any money is usually illegal. One of the things that we do is try and help create that payroll for them to be paying. But a lot of times they come to us with, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars already in debt to the courts, all for probation. If we don't help offset some of those costs, if we don't show that we're willing to write that check for $1,000 and then you slowly pay us back with the work that you do, we would have a situation where, you know, one of our participants might actually consider breaking the law to get that $1,000. I've watched many times probation clients in the system walk in to the probation department and pay with tens and twenties, pay hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars. Where do you think they're making that? For someone that has never made a legal dollar in their life, that is the system setting you up to fail. One of the things that we do with our dollars is we will help pay some of those court costs, but then gently have the guys paying it back. Have the men and women actually paying their own way, but not expecting them to go out and do it all at once. And not telling them if they can't do it, they go to jail. Those dollars that you're giving to our program, we don't just give them away. We do use those to help support and protect our clients from the system. When the system is telling you, you come up with $1,000 by the end of the week or the month, or you're going to jail, I will start working these young men and women, working these participants even more on off days. Like tomorrow, I'm going to be in here on Sunday working with one of our participants that needs to learn how to drive, and another one that needs more hours on their paycheck. There's ways to make it so that our children are, even though there's some in their 20s, they're still children. There's ways to make it so that our clients do not fail while still teaching them how to take care of themselves and how to take care of their responsibilities. Being able to do that, being able to show the community is helping us protect the participants from a system that is set up to just keep the participants in the system. It doesn't work. We've got to let these kids get out of the system and learn how to take care of themselves. Learn how to go to work. Learn how to have that sense of self-worth and work ethic. You're not going to do that by verbally abusing someone, by giving them the freedom to incur $1,000 worth of debt and then giving them a ultimatum that if they can't pay it within a matter of days, they go to jail. That's a bad scenario. That is setting up for failure. That's not what we do. In our mentoring program, with the dollars that we get from the community, with the dollars that we make from our work, we use that to teach our participants how to pay their bills. When the system says, if you don't pay for your anklet, for your detention, for your probation, you're going back to jail. I don't know that the people that are saying that really understand what they're doing. When you've never made a legal living, when you've never been given that opportunity, how are you supposed to go out and do it when you're under the gun, when you're under the thumb of the detention center? Giving dollars to us gives us that ability to help teach in a positive way how you pay your bills, how you take care of yourself, and how you get yourself out of the system.
What is the best way that folks can donate? Are you looking for material donations, gift cards, or is cash and credit card donations really the best way to contribute?
You know, we've, for, 20 years, been accepting donations. We are standing on the shoulders of our community because of the donations that we've been giving. The best way, honestly, to be involved with Rupert's Kids is to look and see what we need. We need food, fuel, supplies, clothing, all those things that you need in your day-to-day life. Those are the things that these guys, these men and women, do not have. Fuel cards, food cards. Walmart or, you know, Costco, Sam's Club. The food cards and the fuel cards and the box store cards, being able to go out, you know, I'm going to take some participants on a driving tomorrow to Aldi's. If we had some Aldi's cards, that would be great. If we had some Kroger's cards, that would be great. That's one way. Another way, look at our website. Get on our website. Heck, you're already here. Come find the donate button. Hit that donate button and give. A few hundred dollars a month can change a kid's life. Or a few thousand dollars a month putting them into the system and teaching them how to be a career criminal. I don't think there's any choice. I'd rather empower our community. And the best way to do that? Donating money, donating items. If you look in your house and you realize how many towels, sheets, washcloths, how many plates, napkins, cups, silverware, how much stuff you have. We have young men and women showing up on our doorstep with nothing, almost every day. We get donations of household items, and I just open a box up, I'll lay it out on the table, and within 10 minutes, we've got people boxing them up and stocking their own kitchens, taking them home, because they're tired of using plastic forks and knives. They don't want to just keep throwing away their paper plate. They actually want to have real plates. They want to have more than just a towel in their house. The way you help Rupert's Kids, gift cards are always good. Cash donations are always good. Giving of yourself and your time, showing up at our office on our volunteer meeting night. That is a very good way. Being involved. The only reason that we've been able to make it 20 plus years in the community here in Indianapolis is because of you guys. It's the donations that you give that help keep our program going.